Jam! Hello again and welcome back to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTGCast Network. This is, if my information is correct, Monday Night Magic number 529.
Yay!
Hooray! That is not a small number.
No, it keeps getting bigger for some reason.
It's weird.
What are we feeding it? Time.
Yes. A bunch of eyes from Goblin.
Chronomaton.
So I am Chewy, and with me as always is recently added to the which dictionary was it?
The Oxford.
Yeah, the Oxford Dictionary. Squee.
Hi, I'm in the dictionary now.
Yay!
There are lots of eyes in there. I am not among them. Yeah, I am here. You know who's not here?
The same one Jack. That wasn't here last week?
Jack is not here.
I was right. Jack was not here last week either.
Yeah.
But no, Clues couldn't join us because of work, but Clues will still be here because he and the Lady Clues recorded a brief recap, there we go, of what happened at PAX from a Magic perspective, which we are going to go to right now. Take it away, Clueses.
So for the sweetened condensed version of our recap of the fantastic events at PAX Prime 2016, where WotC had a, let's call it an expanded presence. WotC had taken over the entire Paramount Theater just about two blocks from the main convention center and turned it into our little glimpse into the future of Magic at Kaladesh. I am here, joined by none other than
Dr. Mrs. Dr. Science, a.k.a. Jen Locklews. I am Clues' wife.
That's right. So we were at PAX just like a week ago. Has it really been a week?
Yeah, it was only a week.
Oh my God.
We had just started playing Two-Headed Giant exactly a week ago.
Exactly 1 week ago today, we were playing Two-Headed Giant. So WotC had several things going on. They had Worlds going on. Worlds was taking place on the main stage at the Paramount at various and sundry times throughout the weekend. And in some cases in the past, they've had Worlds or whatever events that they were trying to do at PAX, like really separated from the event. Like, it's not that the public was kept out completely necessarily, but they weren't really encouraged to be there. Here, you were just a stone's throw from the action the entire time. You were just yards away from the competitors. They were on the main stage. You were on the floor of the venue.
They did a really interesting thing for the early days of Worlds where they used directional speakers so that the Paramount is an old vaudeville theater, so there's a huge mezzanine and balcony. And if you wanted to sit and watch Worlds, they had the projected video from the Twitch stream and then the audio, I believe actually the audio going out on the stream.
Yes, I believe so.
Through directional speakers so that theoretically it could only be heard in the mezzanine and balcony so that the players on the stage could not hear you or could not hear the commentators. But if you wanted to sit and watch, you could hear what the commentators were saying. It wasn't just empty video. The last day of Worlds, they actually changed this, since there was only one match at a time. They actually put headsets on the players so that they could not hear anything else. They could hear each other because the headsets were mic'd. And then everyone else in the venue could hear the audio from the commentators. You could watch the game being played live, or you could watch the video from the Twitch stream because that was being projected above the stage. So it was a really interesting way to kind of involve people who were at PAX in Worlds.
Yeah, it was really nice, quite frankly. When you weren't up on the main stage, you know, us mere mortals were out there playing events brought to us by the nice folks at Channel Fireball, who did a fantastic job of putting together events that would run fairly quickly, because anytime you're at a con, you don't want to spend 6-8 hours trying to get through a tournament that's going on when there's other stuff that you could be doing. So there weren't any constructed events. All of the events were on-demand drafts. They had some sealed Two-Headed Giant events. They had some sealed Deck Builders Toolkit events. So it was all stuff that was relatively fast. We played in two of the Two-Headed Giant events. They were, oh boy, I'm going to say they were pretty much hitting minimum times as recommended, for like build and rounds. We had 40 minutes to build our decks and then 45 minute rounds, which if you've ever played a round of Two-Headed Giant, you know that is crazy fast. And they made it so that the pairings were random. So you played three rounds paired randomly.
Kind of pseudo randomly.
We think that they were pairing, groups of four in every configuration, but anyway, that's beside the point. Basically so that the results of a match did not change anything about who was playing in the next round. So literally as soon as the round ended, they had the pairings for the next round, which was a fantastic way to do it. Hats off to Channel Fireball for doing things that way.
They were also allowing ties.
They were.
In that the way prizes were given was that as the matches began, the judge would come around, drop a pile of 12 prize tokens in each match.
To be redeemed at the prize wall, you know, so it's the standard GP prize wall sort of thing.
Yeah. So the idea being that the winning team gets 8, the losing team gets 4, which that splits evenly to 6 per team. So if you tied, then each team got 6. And in fact, they made it clear that if at the end of time, the current team was allowed to finish their turn. If there was still no team that was dead, it was a tie. You moved on to your next match. No sudden death. No who's at a lower life total. Nope.
No extra. It was just a tie. No nothing. It was nice. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was kind of refreshing.
And everyone seemed to be having a ton of fun. Nobody was taking it terribly seriously. There seemed to be a lot of people who hadn't played in a while, who I don't know if their friends talked them into it. I don't know if they were interested in Kaladesh, but they came back and they were playing Two-Headed Giant. I don't know what the other events were like, but we played in two different Two-Headed Giant events. And in both, our opponents were largely people who were not currently active in competitive Magic.
And I would describe all of our opponents as chill. They were great. Absolutely. Oh,
definitely.
Great. One set, we taught them how to kill us just as time was running out because they had missed a thing and they could totally kill us, and they did. And that was fine. We had a blast.
Yeah.
It was great. So there was that going on. They had panels going on throughout the weekend. We only made it to one of the panels, just because there were other events that we had to try and get to and friends we wanted to meet up with. So we only got to one of them, but all the panels took place at the Paramount as well. So there was plenty of seating, which has always been a big problem with Magic panels in the past. You had to get into line like an hour early and you might not even make it in, but no, this, plenty of seating because the Paramount Theater is quite large. There was plenty of space to have spectators for things like that.
And we were not the only ones that commented on that. We have some friends who actually live out in Seattle, and he only had a badge for Friday. And he's very much into world building and loves to attend the world building panels. And on this one, he was assuming it wouldn't be on Friday. He was assuming we wouldn't get to see it. And even if it was on Friday, he wasn't sure he was going to have time to stand in line. And it turned out to be at the Paramount at a time he could make it to. And he was just able to walk in, sit down, and enjoy the world building panel. So he was very excited about that.
And finally, I don't think we've missed anything, the street fair.
Oh, yes.
They had the Kaladesh street fair, which was right outside of the Paramount Theater. Now, this area, you didn't need a badge to get into, so even the general public could just walk up and be involved in this. And so they had several different things going on. They had food vendors, some local food trucks that came in that had some spectacular food. They had some local crafts folks who were doing like glass blowing, one that was just, you know, kind of glass vessels, that sort of thing, and one that was doing like artwork, like intricate small glass things. Like colored glass, that sort of thing. They had a blacksmith with portable forge. So, you know, they had this whole kind of crafting and inventing and building sort of vibe, the kinds of things you'd want in Kaladesh.
They had a giant puppet of that
elk thing
from
Kaladesh. If you've seen any pictures of the street fair, you've probably seen this elk, and the pictures do not do it justice.
No.
It was this giant, intricate contraption.
You could sit in it.
You could
sit in between its feet, and that was actually how the puppeteer would control it.
Yeah, to move the head, and it was really cool. They had a merch booth that was out in that area. They had a more expanded selection of merchandise inside the Paramount, but you needed a badge to get in there. But they had things like t-shirts and hoodies and hats and things like that. Playmats while supplies lasted, which was not very long because the playmat was awesome.
The playmat was specific to PAX West 2016 and specific to Kaladesh. And at first glance, it just looks like it's Kaladesh.
Don't tell them. They have to listen to the extended interview to find out what it was.
Okay, that's fair.
Because there's an extended version of this interview somewhere else, probably.
It'll be in the
show notes. See the
show notes.
Yeah, that's right. Always encourage them to read the show notes because we know they're not going to. They also had a tent where you could build thopters. They had the little build a thopter kit that are going to be in the pre-release kits for Kaladesh. So that's an exciting thing. Definitely look forward to that. I thought it was fun, but I'm a kid at heart. And then they had a tent where they had, like meet and greet with cosplayers and members of R&D and that sort of thing that was going on.
Oh, and they had someone doing airbrush tattoos.
Oh yes, the airbrush tattoos. Yep. I almost forgot.
And with the exception of the food tent, everything was free. The free airbrush tattoos, watching the craftspeople sitting in the tents, playing some magic. You could pick up a free, if you had a badge, you could go into the Paramount, pick up a free, one of those little 30 card intro decks, except now they're
30 card intro decks.
Single colored decks in a box, so you can shuffle them together and make a 60 card dual colored deck. And so there was space that if you wanted to just break those out and play them in one of the tents or whatever, you could. And the Paramount is an old vaudeville theater, a lot of gilding. It went really nicely with the Kaladesh theme. The building itself, they had decorated a lot of the interior, but a lot of the interior they didn't have to decorate because it still fit.
It was thematically on point, absolutely. And they had a big learn-to-play area inside of the Paramount as well. We didn't make it into there, but it saw lots of foot traffic from I saw. So overall, I think WotC hit a home run with the things that they did here. Given the space and time constraints, I'm not sure what I would suggest that they do better.
No.
I think they did a great job of trying to capture the feeling, the flavor, the vibe of Kaladesh, and doing so in a way that could involve a lot of different players and a lot of different folks who are involved in Magic at all kinds of levels.
And that has been a change. Previous PAXes have often involved a party that you had to do an activity. You got a ticket, but it was often held someplace where alcohol was served. So you had to be 21 or older to go to the party. It was only at one time usually on a Saturday night. So if you either didn't have a Saturday badge or you weren't able to make it at that time because you had another commitment, you didn't get to experience it. And so I think this one was a lot more accessible to people, because it was, the street fair was running all day, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday during show hours. I think the street fair closed at 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. So that was plenty. Yes, it wasn't right at the WSCC, but it was like a block and a half away.
Yeah, it was just around the corner.
Not a big deal. Anybody could get there. And like we said, based on the people that we played against in Two-Headed Giant, I think it drew a lot of people back in.
Yeah, I agree. So, big thank you to WotC, who ran the events, to all of the judges and the staff at Channel Fireball, who ran the Magic playing events, to Steve Port and Legion Games, who was doing the merch at the place, and all the volunteers. They had folks dressed up who were outside at the street fair.
And I believe all of the Learn to Play folks, except for a few WotC people, were also volunteers.
Yeah, and I think most of them were Lady Planeswalker Society, mm-hmm. So big thanks to them.
Yep.
So just kudos all around, to anybody we've forgotten. We apologize, but, it was a great experience. I'm so glad that we got a chance to be a part of it, and I hope everyone who went had a good time.
Thanks.
All right. So, back to you guys.
Oh, I thank you, sir. So there you go. That was the brief version of Magic at PAX. The longer extended version he was talking about was 40, hey man, come on, pop up. 43, almost 44 minutes long.
Do you think it has all those scenes that make the plot make more sense?
Possibly.
I mean, I just watched the extended scenes from Age of Apocalypse earlier today, and admittedly, it's funny watching Nightcrawler try to put on shoes. Maybe it's like that.
That seems good. So I assume that Clues will be putting this up somewhere on his feed, because putting it up like on Patreon or something just seems kind of silly since it's Clues's.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
Yeah, so, yeah, I assume it'll be on randomdiscard.com.
And by saying this now, it must be.
Let me go look up. Yeah, randomdiscard.com actually does work. Good. It still redirects to the Card Advantage website, but it's still the same. So good, good, good.
That's where you should go to listen to Clues.
Yes.
Also here sometimes.
also here sometimes.
Like a minute ago.
It's true. So there you go. I'm glad that the actual events went well and the street fair was cool and all of that. Yay. Now Bill hasn't heard it, but yeah, the way that Worlds was set up was apparently really well done and, spectator friendly, which is awesome. So yeah, hell yeah. So let's go on to the big news. Shall we go to the big news?
All right, magic.
Yeah. So the big news is, almost 800 teams showed up in Kyoto. Hang on. That's not the big news.
That's a lot of teams, though.
That is a lot of teams. That's not the big news, though. Hang on. Scroll. Magic Online news? No, hang on. Scroll the other way.
Too far.
Oh, right. The new rarity.
Oh, yeah.
That should make people sit up. What?
Okay, so let's recap. You got commons.
Well, before that, you've got, like, the basic land.
Right, you have basic lands. Like, the most basic of basic. So you got your basic lands, which are worth pretty much nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we use them for proxies.
Playtest cards.
We don't use anything for proxies. That would be insane. Yes, playtest cards with words and Sharpie technology. are often involve those if you don't have like checklist cards with magic facts lying around. So you got that. Then you got uncommons, which are rocking it at, you know, 3 a pack, which are usually a little more exciting for the limited environment. And then you got rares, which for the longest time were the be all and end all of the value of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
And then way back when we had just gotten through the introduction of the Planeswalkers and Lorwyn, and it's like, man, Planeswalkers are awesome, but they're just rares. Like, what can we do to make this more profitable? Oh, I know. How about Shards of Alara? We introduce a new rarity, the mythic rare.
The end of magic.
Magic ended so hard that year, you guys.
It did, yeah.
Like, repeatedly. And so with the end of Magic, we got a new rarity that was sort of the first time we'd had a rarity of something that wasn't in every pack. Not because, like, we'd had other weird one-off things before, but whatever. Like, we ultimately would be like, I get a pack. Maybe there's a rare. Maybe there's a mythic. Who knows which one, if not both, because foils and other nonsense that some guy will tell Chewie about. but more importantly, that was the last time that we really got a new rarity that was just like an evergreen, always there rarity. And there was a lot of criticism about how the world would end because we would end up in this horrible tournament hellscape of nothing but really expensive cards that had a much harder time getting than old rares. And so now that we're there, we had to find
like,
a way
wait, what?
to one-up this, right? But can we one-up it in a way that doesn't ruin and actually kill Magic? What do you think, Joey?
Possibly.
Is there any kind of precedent for something more rare than Mythic?
Yes. They did it just recently, in fact.
Oh.
You opened one on the air.
I did.
The Zendikar Expeditions were an example of a higher rarity inside a pack of Magic that you may or may not ever see ever in the history of ever.
Yeah.
Like me, who never saw one ever.
Yeah, and it was at the level of rarity where you could buy multiple booster boxes and still not see one, and it wasn't a bad run, it just wasn't likely that you would see one.
Exactly.
Because the odds on them, I think for those it skewed back and forth, but people were floating in the world of roughly 1 in 144 packs or something.
I don't remember.
Like, don't actually quote me on that, it's just a matter of like, the general understanding from people is like, you get maybe like one a case. Like, they were not at all common. They were legitimately rare, even by the density of people opening magic packs at the rate that we do. That you would maybe have one or two opened during a pre-release of a lot of people. So, given that, that was a Zendikar thing. Because Zendikar is where you go for expeditions. The only other weird thing that ever happened in Zendikar was never happening again, and that was the Priceless Treasures thing, which ask your parents.
Oh, wow. I found, while you were talking about, I found a statistics of Zendikar Expedition lands on Reddit from a year ago.
Ooh.
It says, after lots of math, the odds of any given pack of BFZ containing a ZE land are 1 in 432, or roughly-
Way more rare than what I just said.
Or roughly 0.2%. Wow.
That actually makes it more absurd that I managed to, by the end of that run, get 3 of them. Because I did not go crazy for boxes. I guess that was just offsetting my luck of the sometimes entire sets where I don't open mythics.
And then there's someone down here telling him that that's not even close.
Okay, then. Reddit.
So, yeah, this is Reddit for you people. So that means the expeditions are like 1 out of 130, according to the math provided by this person who says, nope, you're wrong.
That sounds more close to what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
Either way, way more rare than 1 a pack or 1 in 8.5 packs. Like, you're not going to bust open a fat pack and have 3 of them.
Right.
So, that said, though, that was a Zendikar thing. When we went to Shadows of Innistrad, we had none of that. We had other nonsense going on with double face cards and all that, but it wasn't a new rarity. It was just something else.
Correct.
So now what, Chewie?
Well, so here's a thing that people seem to want to forget, myself included, every once in a while. So Wizards of the Coast is a business.
What?
And do you know what businesses are here for?
To give us things for free?
Yes. Wait, no.
Oh, the other thing.
To make all of the money that you have. They don't care if you go broke as long as they get some of your money. And that's every business, especially one owned by Hasbro, which, as we all know, has no soul because Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
If you hire Michael Bay, you have no soul.
Sorry, Ninja Turtle friends.
Yeah. But is that Hasbro? No. Who owns Ninja Turtles?
Ninja Turtles?
Do, do, do,
do. I was mostly just alluding to Michael Bay touching the franchise.
That's true. I'm just curious who owns...
Nickelodeon at this point, I think.
Publisher, created by... Thanks. Wikipedia.
Eastman and Laird. Gasp. Amazement. Yeah, like, when they look like ducks.
Like, they created it, but I really want to know who owns them. And it's not going to tell me. Okay, screw you, Wikipedia. But anyway, the point is... Wizards looked at how the Zendikar expeditions did, and they said, holy crap, lots of people bought lots of packs because of those.
Mm-hmm.
I bet if we do that more often, lots of people will buy lots of packs more, and then we'll have more money.
That does sound accurate.
So now they're doing it in every set. Ding.
Cha-ching.
yeah.
You guys know that time we made money? What if we always did that?
Right?
Would we always make money? Maybe.
Let's find out.
Let's take a risk and make money.
It's not much of a risk, though.
Well, yeah. And so before you freak out, as a reminder, the expeditions were not the only way to get any card.
Yeah, all the expeditions were reprints.
They were either reprints or they were cards that were printed in that set, in the case of the ones from the second set of the block, the Gatewatch set. So, or with the first set of the, whatever. The we're only new cards were within the set. They were the new duels.
Exactly. And hey, guess what? They're doing it again. So they have announced today the Masterpiece series. There will be a higher rarity subset of cards that are super fancy in every set.
Yep.
There will be roughly 50 per block. For instance, the Masterpiece series cards are referred to as Kaladesh Inventions, which is actually a really cool name.
Yeah.
Mm. There are 30 in Kaladesh and 24 in Aether Revolt. So there you go. They're super fancy. They have a whole new foiling process. I'm assuming it's something similar to the Expeditions.
Presumably.
I have hiccups all of a sudden. Forgive me.
They, like the Expeditions, they have a fancy, unique card frame that will make them annoyingly hard to view in articles in the future.
Yeah, more on that in a minute. But
It's very neat. It's full of filigree. You can tell imminently from looking at it what set it came from.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And so, yeah, it's a way for them to have a higher rarity without actually affecting card availability. Because all of the... all of the inventions, which, later today, the full list was revealed. And these are all either reprints or they're in this set already. So let's run through the list real quick, shall we? Just.
Okay.
For fun. So there are the 5 Gear Hulks, which are the new mythic,
Robo Titans.
Yeah, the Robo Titans, from Kaladesh. They're all pretty cool.
Yep.
Oh, let me just read some here. Aether Vial, Champion's Helm. Okay, wait. Who's Aether Vial for? Aether Vial is for legacy players.
Is this like that Aether Vial thing with the AE symbol, but the way we write it now?
Oh, look, they did. They
yeah, that's retro- how they do it going forward.
I knew they were getting rid of it going forward. I didn't know if that would retroactively apply to reprints. That's cool.
Yeah, looks like it.
Champion's Helm. That's for commander players, I would assume, because
it's a hat.
No one else would play that.
Legendary creature gets hexproof? I would hope that's a commander card.
Yeah. Chromatic Lantern.
Those are good.
Those are good. Chrome Mox. That's good. Cloudstone Curio. Maybe that's the one you'll open, Bill.
maybe.
Crucible of Worlds. Here's a big one. Gauntlet of Power.
The Infinity Gauntlet much?
Frequently, it seems.
Yeah.
Oh, look, Hangerback Walker. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
Lightning Greaves. Lotus Petal. That's a big one.
Yeah. Thing costs zero. Yeah. It has Lotus in the name.
Yeah. Here are two very big ones. Mana Crypt and Mana Vault.
Boom.
Yeah, only the second time that Mana Crypt has been reprinted.
Was the other one in one of the From the Vaults?
No, it was Vintage Masters, actually.
Oh.
It was the book promo. The first time it was ever reprinted was Vintage Masters, and now here it is again.
Well, okay then.
Mind's Eye, no one cares. Mox Opal, Painter's Servant, Rings of Bright Hearth, Scroll Rack, Sculpting Steel, Soul Ring, Solemn Simulacrum.
Look at that guy.
I love that card. Static Orb, Steel Overseer, and then Sword of Feast and Famine, Sword of Fire and Ice, and Sword of Light and Shadow. $5 says we get the other two swords in Aether Revolt.
Seems pretty likely. You gotta get that Sword of Eggs and Bacon.
Buh. I don't like
eggs. Looking over this, I'm gonna probably, if I get any of them, it's gonna end up being Rings of Bright Hearth.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, oh man, I already had like 9 of these.
Yeah.
But these look pretty.
So that's the list. Now, you'll notice, like I said, they're all reprints, except for these 5 Gear Hulks, and they might as well be reprints because they're in the same set. So they're essentially reprints that are being reprinted concurrently. So there are no cards that are only inventions. They're only in the Masterpiece series. They're all reprints.
That is critical.
This is critical, because if there was one that was a brand new card, then everyone losing their mind and freaking out and being pissed would be completely understandable. Mm-hmm. But there aren't. And they claim that there will never be. But of course they have to say that now. But for now, that's going to be the truth.
Because, yeah, if you were to introduce a hyper-crazy rarity and even one of the cards in it saw play, and that was the only way to get it, yeah, people would be justifiably angry and the game could actually fall over and poop itself. We are not there, and it doesn't look like we're going there. Where we are going is, you know how it's kind of cool when you get a foil and the foil happens to be a good card? Yeah. Now there's a more extreme version of getting a foil. Like, it doesn't give you access to anything that you couldn't get otherwise, but it's a crazy awesome thing, and it's probably going to be worth a lot if you want to convert that into a bill or give it to Bill. Like, both of those are great outcomes.
Yeah, it makes me happy that I could theoretically open up, you know, next month's power bill at the pre-release. That excites me.
The odds of it happening are so low that you're not disappointed if it doesn't happen. But if it happens, that's great.
Yeah, it's all upside.
Which is the point. And this
unless
is
I get a Cloudstone Curio, in which case I'll be like, great.
You'd sell it to Mike.
And he's dumb enough to buy it, too.
Mike likes pretty things.
But, yeah. So, yes. Okay, it's a marketing ploy. That's exactly what it is. It's a money grab. But
sure
that's
is.
Okay, because it's not a money grab at the expense of the quality of the game or the cohesion of the game or the integrity of the game.
There are no negative outcomes. If you're that one guy who has to own one of everything, you have long since given up on ever being happy with Magic Gathering.
Yeah.
It will not work out for you. Maybe this is your time to make a clean break. Because you will not be happy by the end of this.
Yeah, if you're one of those people who their EDH deck has to be fully blinged out or their cube has to be fully blinged out, well, that's your own fault.
This is an intervention that WotC is doing for you, and they are charging you for it.
Yup. So, yeah, I mean, personally, I don't like it. But that's because I don't buy or play or open any sort of Magic except for the pre-release. So this has absolutely zero effect on me personally.
Yeah. The main thing to note, like what happened with the Expeditions is, if you're at a pre-release and a kid or a new player opens one of these, don't let them get ripped off.
For the love of God, please step in.
Yeah, don't let that happen.
Human being.
Because if someone's first experience with Magic is getting ripped off, they're probably never going to play it again. And that's terrible. Let them grow into a long-term player who gets ripped off slowly by Wizards. Don't let that guy at the store do it.
screw that guy.
He's terrible. But yeah.
So, yeah, there's a whole lot. Like, Mark Rosewater wrote a lot about this, but it's essentially all very easy.
Yeah.
The thing that weirds me out is that they're legal and limited when you open them, and that makes my head hurt.
Well, it was the same with the lands, but admittedly these will have a lot more impact than the lands did. Like, if you opened one of them, you probably didn't actually want to play it in limited, just because of the value.
Right.
But if you're playing your way through an amazing tournament or something here, and it's like, alright, we're gonna draft, and you just pull out, say, a Sword of Feast and Famine, you might want to run that. It's a really good card.
Possibly. Just go get up. Buy a second pack of sleeves.
Yeah.
And double sleeve your deck.
Yeah. It'll be worthwhile, because these cards actually have major game impact rather than just simply happening to fix your mana if you happen to be in those colors. Some of them are really important. And that'll be the way of things going forward. So after we've done this once or twice, it'll not be that, oh, crazy, awesome, I hope I get one. It'll just be like, oh, hey, that happened. Neat.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get used to it. In the meantime, they're pretty and enjoy nice things.
Yeah, now, some things about them going forward. You'll notice these are all artifacts. Well, that's because we're in Kaladesh.
Yeah, it's where you go to get artifacts if you don't want to get completed.
And they have the really cool filigree border. Yeah. And it is really cool. Like,
it is a lot prettier than the Expedition border.
I think that's probably my favorite part of these cards, is how cool the border is. And the fact that you can actually see the art behind the border, which means the border is just the filigree.
Yeah, it's not like we put a filigree over another texture. Like, that's what the border is.
Yeah, like the black border with a filigree on it. No, it's just filigree. It's so cool. But going forward, they're going to tie in thematically with whatever the block is. So, like, in the next block is Amonkhet. So, Amonkhet. So the next block is Amonkhet. So it'll probably be, I don't know, sand.
It'll probably look like the inside of a pyramid. When you think of, like, old Indiana Jones type temple stuff, it's probably gonna be like that.
That'd be pretty neat. And they won't all be, they almost certainly won't be all artifacts.
That'd
It'll
be weird.
Be some other stuff.
It'll be 45 camels.
Hell yeah, camel. And this is a way for them to reprint some of those high impact cards from, non-standard formats, you know, the high impact modern and, legacy cards, even some commander cards, obviously, without affecting standard. That's important. They claimed that when they reprinted Thoughtseize in whatever set that was in.
Theros.
Okay. That it ruined standard. I don't think, like, they were like, reprinting Thoughtseize in standard was a mistake, and I don't know if I necessarily agree with that statement, but whatever.
Reprinting Thoughtseize when you were also setting up a mono black deck was probably a little more extreme. Like, it was a good time for it, but it's also just a good card.
Yeah, so I don't know how they mean it was a mistake. Like, sure, all decks that were playing black ran it, but no kidding, it's a ridiculous card.
Yeah, it's just like when they reprinted Lightning Bolt and the world didn't end.
Yeah, so I don't know why, but I mean, designers and developers have claimed that that was a mistake. If someone would like to tweet at me and explain to me why, I would love that.
I mean, it is a miserable standard when certain deck archetypes don't work. Like, trying to get combo off against four Thoughtseize is just not going to happen.
And maybe that's what they mean, is that it... But of course, I mean, if they had reprinted something comparable to Thoughtseize, it still would have happened.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
I mean, I'm sort of looking at this like, in the past, when they wanted to bring cards out to make them playable, you either had to crack open, like, a From the Vault level set, which, good luck, or you had to hope that it would show up in something like Commander Product when they started doing that.
And the problem with that is then that warps how the Commander Products sell. Like, yes, it sells
it
the Commander
Products. It becomes impossible for the people that it's meant for to get it.
Exactly, yeah. Target audience is a thing.
Yeah.
And when all the Legacy players are buying four copies of this thing so they can get True Name Nemesis, okay, well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And so this is a way for them to, A, not warp Standard, B, not warp how these supplemental, I guess, products are sold.
Yeah, there's no risk of it skewing who buys it.
Yeah, and it also, it's just a way for them to get more cards out there without the limits of the apparently yearly Masters cycle now. Because apparently that's just what they do from now on. Every year there's another something Masters.
Remember when it was new and special, like 5 years ago?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the Masterpiece series will get sick of talking about them. Probably by the time the second Amon Khet set comes out, we'll be like, fine, jeez.
Oh, those are neat. Cool.
Exactly. Okay.
Artifacts are awesome.
What sort of money are they printing this time? Oh, okay. So
I hope I open one of these. Yeah, mainly it's giving an opportunity for someone to have that nice day where they open something great without ruining anything else.
Exactly.
So cool.
So yeah, so even given all of these positives and I don't know what negatives, because like I said, my first thought was, oh great, another money grab. But of course, because if they have more money, then they can do more stuff. You remember when they took all the money away from the pros to make Worlds happen or the World Championships bigger and everybody lost their minds? So they had to give the money back to the pros, but they also still kept the money in the World Champs?
That was a confusing adventure.
It really was, but that money's got to come from somewhere. So in theory, that's where this money grab is going to be funneling money. And that's a good thing.
I think most of the people that have actually been upset about it were operating on the assumption that this new rarity was going to be like a super mythic and you would actually need to get these cards. And in practice, you don't. And again, if you're that super collector who has to have the best version of everything, your life already sucks and no one sympathizes with you.
Exactly. Unless your life doesn't suck and you still manage to do that, in which case, hey, good on you. Have you considered becoming a patron?
Have you considered doing more with your money?
So, my only problem with it, after some serious thought, my only problem with it is what Bill alluded to earlier, and that is that the auto card pop-up for these cards on websites like, I don't know, GP results and Pro Tour results will be this new Masterpiece Edition version.
Probably forever.
Probably forever, which means I will never be able to just quickly mouse over some cards and see what pops up and understand what I'm seeing for the rest of my damn life.
I mean, for the lands, it was a particularly egregious because, let's be real, most of them look the same.
Yep.
We've seen so many land over the years that now it's like, yeah, that one's kind of red and blue. I imagine it does something, you know, red and blue.
Yeah.
But for these ones, they don't really look much like the other versions of their art. I mean, I guess eventually after we see them enough, we'll get used to it. And because they'll have different card frames over time, that'll probably become memory shorthand. But it's going to be really rough every time a new one comes out and they just replace all the old art with them. Because, like, I like to scroll over the results of any given tournament and see, all right, well, what's new? Mm. And then I see something in this new fancy card frame and then, like, all right, so is that the new one or not? Just like an extra thought step. But, like, this is the most first world of whining about Magic problems in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and like I said, after serious thought, that was the only problem that I came up with. Oh, no, I did have a second thought. Is, you know that guy at the card shop that no one likes?
Yeah,
we all have that one guy at the card shop that no one likes. Like, he shows up at tournaments, and he's a dick, and he's not like, you know, actively being a jerk. He just sucks. That guy's gonna open one of these, and I'm gonna hate him even more. Yeah. Like, I already hate him. Now I'm gonna wish he was dead. So, I'm not one of those people who that bothers. So, but when I say, well, now I wish he was dead, people are gonna be like, Chewy.
I mean, you don't have a lamp. You can't convict him. And kill anybody.
But anyway, so yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, it's basically all upside until you get to, you know, secondary market gouging, but whatever, that's not Wizard's problem.
Secondary market gouging only works if you can't get those cards any other way. If you're being a collector, then this is your life.
Exactly, yeah. So there you go. Plus, and this is a point that Rosewater eventually got to, if more people open this set to get the expeditions, you know, if that actually does drive sales, that means that more of these cards, not these, but more of the rest of the set is out there for people to have, which means that supply and demand means that the price will probably be a little more affordable for the non, masterpiece cards.
Yeah, like, do you remember how most of the cards in Battle for Zendikar eventually hit a reasonable price range? Because so many people were opening every fat pack and sight clues, and so many people were doing everything they could to get all the fancy lands and the expeditions and everything, to the point where if you wanted to find Gideon, you could find Gideon. It's not like the one guy at your shop has all the Gideons, unless he's really working it. You're just going to open them. They're going to happen. And then by the end of it, it means that the overall value of the set long-term is going to probably be pretty low because so much of it was opened. But on the same note, if you're buying Magic for investment, you're going to be sad. Whereas if you want to be able to actually play, lower prices are better for you.
Exactly. By the way, everyone please ignore the MTG Finance hashtag. That thing
is
bad
for you. Hashtag, or I like to use that hashtag for completely other questions. Like, you know, hashtag MTG Finance. Where can I get a good burger near this GP? And then people will tell you where you can get the most affordable burger near that GP. It's like Kibler Google for everyone.
Yay!
I'm going to get a lot of crap for that. That's going to be hilarious.
It's going to be great. So, I mean, as much as people want to talk about the, whatever these things are, the expeditions. No, what are they called? Damn it. The masterpiece. It's going to take a while. There's now three names. There's expeditions, there's inventions, and there's masterpiece series. And the expeditions are the one I've been saying for the longest, so forgive me.
That's going to happen for a little while till we get used to it, because it's our only frame of reference on this.
Exactly. But, like, there's honestly, other than, look how awesome this is, no, it's not the end of the world, here's why. That's all there is to say, really.
Yeah. I mean, if we open them, we'll do a little dance. If we don't open them, we were never really expecting to.
Exactly, yeah.
Don't go in expecting it, you will be sad.
Also, it's, okay, it says here, it's roughly one out of every 144 boosters will be the Masterpiece series.
Okay.
Technically, the Kaladesh booster pack says the ratio is one out of 2,160 cards. And it's slightly more often than opening a a foil mythic. Also, it says these ratios may change for future sets. Of course.
Obviously. Especially as they put more or less of them in a given set. But yeah. Also, these will not be in Magic Duels.
Oh yeah, so they're gonna be only in English, but they will be inserted into non-English product.
Yep.
They have new expansion symbols, which bothers me. Mm-hmm. But that's only because I don't know expansion symbols anymore. Like, I can't look at a symbol and be like, oh, that's, except for Eldritch Moon.
I gave up on that about the time they started doing, you know, two dual decks and a commander set a year.
Yeah.
I just can't do it anymore.
Like, Eldritch Moon I recognize, which means Shadows I recognize if there's an Eldritch Moon one nearby. Like, which one is this? Oh, well, that's Eldritch Moon, so this must be Shadows. But that's it. Like,
my biggest challenges were the cons versus dragons, which my eyes had real trouble with when you got the higher rarities. Like, on black on white, it was easy. But when you started making them, you know, silver, gold, whatever, it got harder to just, you know, if you look at it, you can tell, but it's a little bit tough. But yeah, for these things that I will realistically not see, I'm just going to forget. I'm like, oh, it's got filigree. Okay, I know which set this is.
Yeah. But yeah, the ones from the Kaladesh block will all have one expansion symbol. So the masterpieces from Aether Revolt have the same expansion as the ones in Kaladesh.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Let's see here. They won't be in duels. They will be legal and limited, which is weird. And weird, like, for when someone opens one in a draft, you'd be like, and then they play it. You'll be like, But the big thing that weirds me out here is Masterpiece cards are planned for Magic Online, but will not be redeemable, of course, and are not counted as part of the set, of course. They're going to be distributed in an exciting new way, but we're not quite ready to announce what that is. Look for that announcement later this month. I wonder what an exciting new way to get super rare cards.
Maybe you have to climb the aggro crag. That might do it.
That was terrible.
It was terrible. I already made a Legends of the Hidden Temple joke before, so I didn't want to do that again.
Yeah, fair enough. I didn't even get that one. What was that one?
Oh, no, not this episode.
Oh, okay.
Like, in the past, I like to make references to the Shrine of the Silver Monkey, and I didn't want to go into that this time. But now I have.
And that's the way the game is played. Apparently, I'm the one person who never watched Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Could be.
Oh, well.
But yeah, they'll come up with something. Pure, raw, random guessing speculation. I wouldn't be surprised if they were inserted into prize packs from, like, a replacement for just, like, phantom tickets or something. Like, maybe you get packs of whatever Masters nonsense they invent for it. But we'll see. It could also just be dumped into a cube.
Yeah, no telling.
We don't have enough data for that, so whatever. We'll find out in a few weeks.
And to be honest, we don't really care. Yeah. So.
I'll talk about it at the end of an episode in, like, 2 weeks when we know.
Yeah. So that's really it for the masterpieces. Like, I'm not sure what else there is to say.
I mean, we know what they are. We just went over all the cards with you. That's what it's going to be in this one. There will be more in January, whenever the next set comes out.
And the ones that are in this set are freaking sick. Like, speaking as someone who doesn't play any of these sets or any of these formats, damn, still.
Yeah. Some of these are going to be the cards where if you do open one over the course of it and you don't open one of the mediocre ones, it's actually going to matter. It's going to be like, oh, I'm not going to play with this. I'm going to put it in the sleeve right now. There you have it.
Yeah, I don't know the values of cards off the top of my head, but...
One of them has Mox in its name. Just think about that.
Two of them, actually. There's a Mox Opal, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go, then.
Yeah. So let's see. What are the feel bad ones? Cloudstone Curio, I think.
Rings of Brighthearth?
Rings of Brighthearth. I think there's like a subset of Commander players who might like that one.
I mean, it could be. It's a card that you could buy for like a dollar unless that changed drastically while I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah. Mind's Eye, I don't think is worth anything. If it is, that's Commander again. I'm still tripped out that there are cards who are stupidly expensive because of Commander.
Yeah.
So, actually, now I had MTG stocks. Now I have to look. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
Mind's Eye is not worthless.
Yeah.
Really? Why is this card worth money? Freaking Commander players. And I accidentally did that search over top of my...
Whoa! Rings of Brighthearth is worth money?
Well, how much is that one?
These are all starting at like $15 and they're moderately to heavily played. I've got like 20 of these. Well.
Not for long.
Go on. Huh.
Okay, what about Scroll Rack? Is that still, that used to be worth money. And then it wasn't.
Oh man.
Nope, it is. Okay, never mind.
I have a ton of Rings of Brighthearth because when Planeswalkers came out at the same time, I was psyched about that.
Well, yeah.
And I used to dump them in all my decks. I have so many of those cards. All right. Well, that'll distract me for a little while. If you would like a ton of Rings of Brighthearth, let me know.
All right, website. Are you gonna look up Sculpting Steel, or am I going to have to come over there? Oh, there it is. Sculpting Steel. Okay, that one's like $5 or $6. Okay, good.
Maybe that'll be the one I open.
Well, now I need to see if Cloudstone Curio is somehow...
Ladies and gentlemen, Slow News Week.
Oh my god, it's like $12. What?
Huh.
What? When did it jump? Right before Zendikar came out, or Battle for Zendikar came out. Huh. Anyway. Okay, so maybe even the ones that look like they might be feel bad won't feel so bad.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, the feel bad ones last time were the newest cycle of lands, which weren't bad, but they were... By comparison to the others, not exciting.
Oh, that's true. The Gear Hulks might be a total bust.
Yeah. Like, none of these look like, I mean, they look like they're going to be fun cards and you'll probably see them for a while, but by comparison to the stuff you could have opened, I guess they'd be the field ads. And there are five of them, so.
Yeah.
They could be your Modern Masters dragons.
Oh, now I'm sad.
Yeah, that was a sad story. All right.
Okay.
Alternatively, you can open an Aether Vial and just be happy.
True. All right. So let's see. Clues told us about packs. I'm sorry. Clueses told us about packs. We talked about the masterpieces. I guess we should talk about the tournaments, huh?
Yeah. I mean, as stated before, a lot of people in Kyoto.
Yeah. So GP Kyoto happened with 779 teams. Damn.
Three guys. Teams of three.
Yeah, that's 2,337 people playing Team Limited. Whew.
Yeah.
And who won? Yuki Matsumoto, Yuki Ichikawa, and Kazuyuki Takemura. Holy crap. So, of course, three pros won.
That tends to be what happens with Team Sealed.
Yeah.
Like, with remarkable consistency. Team Sealed is a format that greatly rewards practice, and not everyone does that. Like, tons of practice and repetitions, and you also have to work really well with the people that you're working with. You can't just be three good players. So it stands to reason that pros that have good practice schedules will probably just do better.
Yep. So just to run through the top four, second play, wait, I scrolled. What are you guys second? Because the profiles.
This listing is not as convenient as our normal listing.
It's really not. Okay, hang on. Okay, second place. Here we go. Is Ken Yukihiro Kitahara Hiroaki. Did I say that right?
Hiroaki, yeah.
And then Kentaro Yamamoto. Two pros in that batch. Third place. Seriously, website? Good lord. Kenta Harane, Fumiya Matsumoto, and Tomonori Hirami. How was that?
Hirami, yeah.
I'm getting good at this.
Yeah.
It looks like that's one pro. Nope, two pros. Well, Hirami won GP Nagoya in 2016.
They've all got pro points now.
So, yeah. And then fourth, or you could not, website, thank you. Fourth place, look out. Pavel Matusik, Peter Sochurik, and Tom Rostovsky. At least one of them is a pro.
Peter is platinum.
Okay, that's why his name looks funny. Oh, look at that. Nice. So there you go.
Yeah, they've all got a good history of doing well at GP events and the like.
So that was your top four teams in Kyoto. And again, since it's Team Limited, there's nothing for us to talk about there. So let's move on to GP Louisville.
Yep.
GP Louisville. As a reminder to people that don't live there, you have to pronounce it with as little pronunciation as possible.
The trick is to only kind of open your mouth.
Exactly. And we're being serious. I have
this
been
isn't
instructed...
us making fun of it. You'll know when I'm making fun of a state. It'll be South Carolina.
Aw. But no. We have all been instructed by people who actually live there.
Yeah.
It's not Louisville, it's Louisville. You have to say it.
If you say Louisville, they'll stare at you like you're some kind of abomination.
And you are. So there were 461 teams, that is 1,383 players. Much smaller than the other, but still pretty good.
Still respectable.
And let's see. Oh, yeah, look who won this. Not that I can find freaking names. Sam Black, Justin Cohen, and Matt Severa. Severa? I think that's right.
I think so. Seems legit.
Yeah, they're Magic players.
Yeah, I've heard these names before.
Yeah, second place is Ben Rubin, Matt Boccio, I think, and Tillman Bragg. Third place is Alexander Hain, Steve Rubin, and Mike Sigrist.
Remember when we said that pros and the like tend to do well in these things?
Oh, we're not done yet. Fourth place, Paul Rietzel, Matt Sperling, and Jelger Vigersma.
Yeah, I know those people too.
Oh my god.
You see, this is why I don't go to Team Sealed events. I'm not pro enough. Also, they tend to be further away.
There is that, yeah. So, yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, these people have dominated a format that will never happen again.
That is true. Because by the time the next one happens, it'll be a more different format.
Yeah.
Damn it, Bill. Now I have to go look.
What are you looking up now?
Okay, Team Limited. The next one is in November.
Oh, we'll be in a whole new plane by then.
Yeah, so it'll just be Kaladesh Limited. Ooh. In case you're wondering, that's in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. So there you go.
Just drive right over.
Yeah, just hurry up. So, all right. Well, there's our Grand Prix.
Yeah.
That was easy.
Don't you love how different it is when we have weeks of no Star City and no Constructed?
Yeah, and unless Star City's website is broken, there was not a Star City event this weekend. So that's nice.
Mm.
Now, to be fair, I looked in the coverage archive, and there wasn't one there. I looked in the schedule, and there wasn't one there. The problem with their schedule is they update it every week.
Yeah.
So once one happens, they take it off the schedule. And there have been very weird times when a tournament has been removed from the schedule but hasn't made its way to the archive yet.
Yeah.
And like, because...
Generally speaking, for me, when I want to check things, I go to the deck lists because whatever they're doing, it's Star City, so it's going to be constructed, and they love to dump the deck list.
Very true. And I did check there eventually, and there weren't any deck lists from this weekend.
There's nothing new there. So
that's good. It's thoroughly confusing. Now, if you really just can't get enough of deck lists, then some of the regional Pro Tour qualifier lists are up. You know, the RPTQs?
Yeah.
For Pro Tour Kaladesh. So you can go check that out. The link is in the show notes. We're not going to talk about them because we're not going to talk about them.
Yeah, you know, standard, it's not going to be here in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but if you want to know what's been going on in your local area or something like that, well then, go check it out.
Yeah. You can also look at the Pretty Play Mat.
There is the Pretty Play Mat, yes. So, I guess there's one more thing here. Should we talk about this?
I guess so. I mean, in this plethora of news, might as well.
Okay. So over on the MTG Salvation forums, also, I have a question. Why is it every website that Curse runs sucks? Like, I hate Salvation. I've always hated Salvation because even the Beast, like before I thought it was like my crappy laptop, but even the Beast chugs on.
As far as I've seen, Salvation is not an efficiently coded website.
Well, Salvation also owns Hearthpwn, which is a Hearthstone site, and it's exactly the same thing. It's terrible. Like, if I have a
Salvation
deck list open,
like a forum that has an interface.
Yeah.
Which and means it's probably running calls on all the data individually constantly, so that it can be modular, and that means it's probably wrecking itself.
Okay, so, hey, if any of you know anyone who works for Curse, curse at them and tell them to fix this crap. Okay, so...
Establish that.
In the MTG Salvation forums, there's a post here that says new storyline art. And what this is, some new art posted on the Planeswalker profile pages on the mothership.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is probably story-only art, but there is a picture of the Gatewatch, Gideon, Liliana, Jace, and Nyssa, with someone else standing there with them. And ordinarily...
Is it Chandra?
It is actually not. Ordinarily, this would be the sort of thing we wouldn't put in the show, but this apparently came from the mothership. Which is weird.
Yeah.
Hang on. MagicStory.com. I really want to go find this now. I don't actually know. MagicStory.com is now... Oh, no. It was MTG Story, wasn't it? Yeah, it was MTG Story. Excuse me. How do you get to Planeswalker profiles on this bastard website?
On the main Magic website?
Articles? No.
Under Game Info Story Planeswalkers?
Game Info Store. Ah, look at you.
I have to wander over there for Magic Online news.
Hmm. So I don't know where this picture would have come from. Anyway, so what the art is, like I said, it's the Gatewatch standing somewhere that is clearly Kaladesh. Get in Liliana, Jace, Nyssa with a Johnny standing behind them.
Well, it's a kitty.
It's a big kitty man. Look at him. He's winking at us. Whoops. I mean, nothing. So yeah, that's cool.
Is he still carrying Elspeth's clothes around?
Well, he's behind everyone, so I can't tell, but probably.
Probably. I mean, you know, cats.
So yeah, the picture of Chandra and her mother, is on here. That's very sweet. Nyssa looking around at what seems to be ley lines, maybe.
Could be.
Since that's apparently what she does now and how they're just going to use her in every story ever. At least for the last two, that's been all she does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, admittedly, how much did she do before that? I mean, she let out the Eldrazi and she got an elf token.
Yay! Hey, she could search up Nyssa's Chosen.
You're right, a non-elf token. Or a non-token elf.
There's another picture here of Nyssa and Chandra apparently locked up.
Wonder how well that worked out.
I don't know, but there are lots of terrible, terrible things you can say from looking at this art, which I'm sure we'll say on the odds and ends. And then there's a really cool picture of Tezzeret reaching towards the camera. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a creepy magic hand.
A little bit. And then, yeah, there's a Johnny. So there's no link to where these came from. I don't know if someone was just data mining, you know, poking around in the background or what, but there you go.
Weird.
I do think it probably makes sense that a Johnny shows up in the story right before we go back to where Nicol Bolas is.
Yeah. Those two had a dual deck, and it actually made sense.
Yeah, they had a history. They have a history. So that's pretty neat. Now, this doesn't mean that we'll get an Ajani card. I mean, we might not, whatever. I don't want to start speculating about Aether Revolt, yeah. Because Kaladesh isn't even out yet.
Yeah, let wizards be the ones who ruin all that. We can wait.
Yeah, but in this promotional art that I'm not sure where it came from, there it is. All right, then.
Yeah.
Feel free to speculate all you want yourselves. So, hey, Bill, is there any Magic Online news?
Well, as it happens, last week we did an episode on Tuesday.
What?
Tuesday, which is when most of the Magic Online news happens. So I've actually already covered most of the Magic Online news. Yay! Let's talk about what few things have occurred since then. Yep, we gotta. So I'm not going to recap the stuff that we already did, but one thing they posted the very next day, the thing that they told us to check back in for, if you recall. They're doing a special, limited time only, full Innistrad sealed league. And by full Innistrad, we're talking sealed with two packs of Innistrad, one of Dark Ascension, two packs of Shadows of Innistrad, and one pack of Eldritch Moon.
Huh.
Yeah.
Neat.
Take that, Avacyn Restored. And so now you can actually go through all of your various forms of Delver of Secrets from start to finish. And it's going to be sealed. It's going to be running from this Wednesday, the 14th, through a week later, on the 21st. So it's going to be 28 tickets or 280 play points. Or if you have the packs of all these things lying around, 4 event tickets. So should be pretty neat. I have no idea how that's going to play together. But as we saw from the actual set, it looked like a lot of stuff overlapped pretty well. So who knows? I am looking forward to seeing Werewolf Aggro completely destroy Slow Make an Imrical. Or maybe it goes in the other direction. Who knows? It'll be fun. Don't count on those meld cards working with your one pack. Yeah. So that's something. Once that's over, on the 21st, they're going to bring back the Legacy Cube, which they do whenever a set comes out in Paper Magic and they want to buy time. So, Legacy Cube. There's a link in the show notes to show you what's in the Legacy Cube, the cost, the time frames, all that nonsense. So, you can have fun with that. And then finally, because we're rocking our way through the Year of Modern, we are wrapping up with Magic 2011, which we just talked about last week with all the Titans and nonsense. And then on Wednesday, Triple Scars of Mirrodin comes out. Scars of Mirrodin being the format that brought Clues' favorite mechanic in effect.
So yay!
You can see just how parasitic that is to a draft environment. You can also enjoy the wonders of Metalcraft, which is questionably functional sometimes. You can get Tumble Magnet, which actually works really well. You can get...
Oh, God. Tumble Magnet was so sick and limited.
You ran it in every deck because it was colorless.
Oh, my God. It was amazing.
It was wonderful. Like, it slows things down. It makes things not block. It does most of what you want, and it contributes to Metalcraft.
Yeah, and it counts for Metalcraft. Dang, because once it runs out of counters, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's just lingering.
It just sits there being an artifact.
That no one's going to waste any removal on, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if they do, then bonus, but it's not going to happen. So you get that happening. And you also get the, because it was the return to a block after so long, they started filling in the rest of the cycles left over from last time. So this is where we get the, Sword of Body and Mind.
Oh yeah, Body and Mind was the first one.
It was the one that was actually previewed in, from the vault.
Yeah.
Or relics or whatever. And, Sword of Body and Mind is the one where you bleed wolves. It's weird. Like, it mills and wolves pop out. It was probably the weakest of the lot by the end of it, but don't underestimate it. An artifact that creates things that can carry it has a way of just taking the game to places that people aren't ready for. So, there's a lot of fun to be had. I think that Scars of Myrdan was kind of a rough limited format. Just because the infect, like, if multiple people are trying to draft infect, it kind of falls apart. Because you have all these creatures that can't deal normal damage, and if they don't get to 10, they're pretty useless. And Metalcraft was hit or miss, but, was Battlecry in the base one, or was that only in, Myrdan Besieged? I don't remember.
Let's see here. Battlecry, Myrdan Besieged.
Okay, so we'll get there in another week.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're looking to play artifacts to get you in the mood for the new set, I'm sure it's a coincidence that they'll take full credit for. You get to see what Myrdan was like right before it really just wrecked itself miserably.
It did not check itself.
No. There was no. In fact, if Karn had checked himself, he would not have wrecked Myrdan.
Oh.
Should have taken a bath first, buddy. Karn is the reason why. You actually, like, wipe your shoes on the mat before you go inside. So, wah-wah, Phyrexian Oil, bad. And that's pretty much it for Magic Online this week. So, next week when we come back on Monday, I'll have this week's Tuesday news, and we'll probably be a little more substantial. But for right now, we already hit it, so yay.
Well, all right then.
Yeah. So, after all that talk about ridiculous probability and opening stuff, do we just want to tear open a conspiracy pack and cut to the chase?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to bother reading off the comments because it's been established that those are irrelevant.
They're completely worthless.
We are currently sitting at like minus $7. I think last week's was a total bust and the first week was a dollar.
Well, it's like minus six something. 650.
Oh, minus six. Oh, that's right. It's rounding. Yeah. Thanks, Google Sheet. Yeah, minus 650. Skipping past the comments. I don't even remember what commons were vaguely relevant, but I don't think it's any of these.
I mean, monetarily, none of them.
Yeah. So, all right. First on common, Mausoleum Turnkey.
I severely doubt that that's worth anything. Hang on. Yeah. Sort by it's price descending. Okay, here we go. Go ahead.
Yeah. Juniper Order Ranger. I remember that guy.
Nice.
Runed Servitor. It's a robot bear.
It draws cards, right?
Yeah, but for both people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of a Phyrexian Arena?
Yes, I have. It is one of my favorite cards. And it's got super sweet Koth art now, and it's worth $3.
Hey! It does have super sweet Koth art. And there's a foil.
Ooh, what's your foil?
Appropriately, Horn of Greed.
Really? Ooh, hang on a minute.
That might actually go somewhere.
Foil, the Horn of Greed is... Turn that off. Pfft. No.
That bad?
Oh, wait. Hang on. Zoom in so I can see what this costs. Oh, wow. Looks like it's at 13.
Wow. Am I actually winning?
Yeah.
Huh.
Is that your last pack?
No. There's still one more to lose on.
Wow.
And then the conspiracy in this one is Natural Unity, which is probably not worth anything.
Yeah, none of the conspiracies are, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But hey, a Foil Horn of Greed and a Phyrexian Arena brings this pack to, like, $16, right?
So what did I say? Control F,
13 and 3?
Yeah, 3 and... 13, yeah. Check that out.
Are we in the positive?
Look at the big bucks on Bill.
All
right. Let's see, you're at minus 650, minus how much was the pack?
$4. So I was at minus 1050, and open 13, we're now at positive 250?
Well, 16 more, because 3 and 13.
Oh, math, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so positive 550?
Wow.
Weird. That means that I will come out ahead.
Yeah, because the next pack is going to be
can only
$4.
Be worth negative $4.
Nice.
Don't go out and buy Conspiracy with the goal of making money. That is still wrong. It took a foil rare to get there.
I don't know if Horn of Greed was available in foil originally. Horn of Greed, MTG. Gatherer. It was in Stronghold. There are foils in Stronghold? Foils didn't pop up until after I stopped playing the first time.
I mean, that's past my experience.
When did MTG start foils? Okay, thanks. Do-do-do-do-do. Foil cards. Oh, come on, man. Urza's Legacy. So, well, yeah, Horn of Greed has not been available in foil.
Huh. Neat.
Hang on, I'm going to go check a site that's slightly more reliable on that sort of thing than Gatherer. Stronghold. Yeah, that's the first time, because I don't see any Judge Foils listed here.
Hmm. I mean, it's a good card. That helps.
I do love me some Horn of Greed.
I like drawing cards. I also like playing land. It works out. I don't know, something just feels right about a foil Horn of Greed, even if the card was terrible.
Yeah, like if there was a foil Greed, that would feel pretty good too. Yeah. Even though Greed is not good.
I wanted it to be, but it's not.
All right then.
Well, good job, Evie. So as long as the packs are only $4, there's a chance. So hey, I guess we go into sign-off time?
Yeah, hell yeah.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinToBob. There's no I in Goblin because I think the Oxford English Dictionary took them all. So I can't confirm because I can't sign into their website and see what the definition of Squee, the noun slash verb, is. But I'm pretty sure it's about a goblin that doesn't stay dead and not what people exclaim on the internet. So given that, yeah, Twitter is pretty awesome. Now that I'm slowly recovering from the world of Dragon Con, I'm going to get back with all the people that reached out to me a week and a half ago on Twitter about an upcoming Enchant World episode. So I'll try to get that sorted out in my precious little free time in the next week or two. I'll keep you guys up to date. But I guess in the meantime, since I'm mentioning it, you can go to enchantworld.com. And if you see interesting topics that you'd like to share stories about, you can go over to share your story and then use the in-website app if you're on a computer. Or you can simply record an audio file and mail it to planeswalker.squee@gmail.com, and it'll get to me. And whenever I hit critical mass on stories, I put out an episode. So it's been kind of quiet lately, but maybe with more content coming directly from me and interviews, it'll wake things up again. So awesome.
To be fair, there's no I in planeswalker.squee because spelling.
There is also that. Yeah. That would be, if that's where the I was, I would be really surprised. Because I missed it for like a year, but hey. So there's that, and beyond all of that, yeah, I'm not going to conventions for a little bit. Like in late October, I'll be helping run one, but I'll talk about that a little bit more closer to it. So yeah, if you're in North Carolina and you want to go to a convention, let me know and I'll point you at it. Past that, I guess that's it for this week. I enjoy these like all sealed tournaments and actual news weeks. They're a nice contrast to week after week of deck lists. So
yeah.
That said, if they're done with news for a while, that's cool too.
Yeah, I got lots of smart ass comments on Twitter. Oh, I thought you said there wouldn't be any news this week.
Well, admittedly, they just dumped most of their news last week. So I guess they were holding out on that one.
Yep. And that's why we didn't record yesterday. Or at least that's one of the reasons.
Like, it was tempting, but if we'd recorded yesterday, it would have literally been. And then there were these two GPs with no deck list. Good night, everybody.
Exactly.
So
I'm glad we waited. Even if it meant we couldn't have clues, at least clues got to tell us about PAX, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then next week, he'll probably be back.
Probably. Hopefully.
Sounds like something you do.
Yeah, but in the meantime, he had work obligations. I think, did he say there was an observatory open house? Is that what it was?
I like to think that he's sky checking extra to make up for the giant risk we took last week when he wasn't there to sky check.
Maybe that was it.
He's probably just sky checking overtime.
Yeah. But Clues isn't here because he's dead. That was last week. And he's not here because he doesn't love us. That's, I mean.
Every other time he's not here.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't love us, and yet he's still usually here, so.
Yeah.
Oh, I also got some feedback on Vintage Artist Constructed.
Yeah.
Remember that format that was going to be at the Pup-a-thon charity event that I talked about last week?
Yeah.
So it's a format created by Mike Linneman, who is Vorthos Mike on Twitter, for those that are aware of that, and Josh Krause, the guy who started OriginalMagicArt.com. And the format uses vintage rules to determine the cards that are legal in the format. That's why it's called Vintage Artist Constructed. But it's that card pool, and the deck building restriction is every card in your deck must have the same artist.
Oh, so it's like the like that uncard that gives you a bonus for having the one named artist.
Yeah. The other twist is this includes basic lands.
Ooh, hard mode.
Exactly. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
That sounds difficult.
He says promos and other places where new art shows up. So like, for instance, maybe the masterpieces are super important.
Yeah, I bet.
So yeah, it's pretty cool. So sorry that we didn't know what the hell that was last week, but why would we?
That's fair.
But yeah. Alex, the guy who originally emailed this to me, emailed me to explain what it was. I was like, oh, that's cool. So by all means, if you have any sort of questions, go hit up Vorthos Mike on Twitter. I'm sure he will be happy to answer your questions.
Yeah.
Alex puts it here, the format's pretty new, and it really makes you look at cards sideways. And yeah, I can totally see that. You have to do gatherer searches in a whole new way now. And even Gatherer sucks for that, because Gatherer doesn't have all the different alternate versions listed. Like, Judge yeah. Foils are not in Gatherer at all. They're just not.
Yeah.
The GP promos? Nope. F&M promos? Nope. Just none of that. So,
yeah.
Gatherer kind of sucks.
Did you notice how if you Google a card, you get all of the information on the right now?
When you Google a card?
Yeah, just do a Google search for a Magic card.
Oh god, I can't think of a Magic card. Give me something specific.
Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Jace the Mind Sculptor, sure. Oh hey, look at that. I bet if you type in something like Arrest, that doesn't work.
Nope. No, probably not as well.
Ooh, what if you go Arrest MTG? Oh look, there it is.
It does.
Huh, how about that?
It'll even fix typos for you, because I just made a typo.
Thanks, Google!
Yeah, and if you click on the actual, like, thing over there, it takes you to Gatherer, so it's not like it's just some random card shop.
Also, so I typed in Arrest MTG, and the autocomplete popped up, and the first thing is Pacifism MTG. That is some next-level stuff right there.
It's like Robo Rosewater was only step one of a greater plan.
Wow.
Da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da.
Neat.
Yep. Oh, and speaking of neat, just to follow up on the question that we sort of were stuck on last week, the other kind of counters that players get are experience counters. Several people pointed that out to us.
Oh, yeah, and I knew there was something.
Yeah, like, we both knew, but, like, I haven't played with that commander set, so I forgot.
Yeah, but I knew there was something from, like, something supplemental that wasn't standard legal, but my brain refused to remember it.
Yeah. Like, I knew there was something, and I knew it was lingering, but couldn't come up with what it was. But you guys jumped in and pointed out it was experience counters, and you were completely right.
And we both went, aw, damn it.
Well, that's the sad thing. It's like, when the first few commander sets came out, I'm like, yeah, I'll just buy all of them. It'll be great. But then when it became an annual thing, I'm like, I don't wanna. That's like $150.
It is. Good. So there you go. So are we going to shut up now?
Probably.
Oh, wait, I should do all my sign-up stuff, huh?
Maniple, maniple, maniple.
Oh, my God. So, hi, I'm Chewy.
Hi.
You can follow me on Twitter at The Manipool. You can go listen to my other podcast, The Manipool. You can find it on themanipool.com.
What if I want your YouTube content?
Well, then you can go to youtube.com/C/themanapool, where I've actually started playing through the Eldritch Moon story. Ha ha ha. People are like, oh, so we'll get Eldritch Moon about the time Aether Revolt comes out? Nope. I'm going to be caught up before Kaladesh comes out. So I'm playing through the Eldritch Moon storyline on Magic Duels, and Emrakul's corruption of the plane was actually so powerful that it corrupted me while I was playing.
Oh, okay.
I actually underwent a transformation, so that was fun.
This is not the first time that's happened to you.
Probably not. This might be the first time it's happened to me on a video, though.
I don't know.
I mean, I know once I teleported Squanto in next to me accidentally.
That was pretty cool. I also seem to recall you having a hair adventure at one point.
There was a hair adventure, yeah.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
But I actually recorded the second Eldritch Moon story video today, but I wasn't able to get it put together and whatnot because I had to go to the grocery store because I was tired of being hungry all the time. So there's that. But I should, and I have to drive tomorrow, so sometime in the next couple days you will get the next Eldritch Moon story video from Magic Duels. I like the battles in the Eldritch Moon story a lot because I'm getting different decks, and they're 60-card decks. I'm like, okay, here's a 40-card deck. Do the first one. Okay, here's a 45-card deck. Do the second one. And I'm like, oh, that's
terrible.
And I think I get it. You know, they want the first story mode in each block to be sort of an introduction for new players who just pick it up. But for those of us that aren't, it's obnoxious. So it's really nice that this second set it is just here. Here's a deck. Go do a thing. Here's a more different deck. Go do a thing. Yay. Here's a quick teaser. I actually got to cast Call the Gatewatch.
Is that like a bat signal?
Yeah, I was like, whoa, it was so cool. And I got to play as the good guys.
What?
In one of the fights in the second batch. So I got to play as the Eldrazi finally. Yeah, smash those stupid planeswalkers. Ah, I mean.
Look, you're just hungry.
Excuse me, I was under Emrakul's influence, I'm sorry.
Smash?
Like Hulk.
Big Hulk.
Other things that have been going on the YouTube channel just while I'm here. I started a new show, for lack of a better term. I think I mentioned this last week. I have lots of first-person games that I really want to play, and I wanted to tie them all together. So I have a new show called Where Are My Legs?
Oh, man, I would miss those.
And I will be playing through a bunch of first-person games. The first one went up already. I played through a game called Refunct, which is a first-person, very peaceful, very chill, very mellow, like parkour game where in the comments, I think it was Stark called it a high def remake of Qbert because everything is a very very plain concrete color. And when you step on it, it becomes, alive again, green and brown, you know. And then you touch a button and more land rises up and you have to go touch everything and change it to green. And there's no information. It just, you're playing now and you have to figure it all out. And it's really cool. Like, it's accessible to everyone. I'm pretty sure if I handed my mom the controller and told her what the buttons did, she could figure out how to play and actually enjoy it. Like, but even though it's accessible to people like my mom, you know, who don't play video games, it's also fun for people like me, who do play video games. Like, I enjoyed it. And it's very short. In like 30 minutes, you can run through the whole thing, which I did. And there was actually a patch a couple days ago. They've added a functionality with speedrunning software and whatnot.
Oh?
Because it's such a short game that's very, you know, set. There's no randomization or anything. Yeah, speedrunning has popped up as a thing you can do, which is really cool.
Neat.
So, yeah, hell yeah. If you want to see that, then go to the YouTube channel. I've also been playing Rogue Legacy again. Oh my god, I love that game. And for anyone who has seen the videos or wants to play, it's actually on sale for like $3 and change over on the Humble store. So if you go to humblebundle.com and click on the store, you can search for it there. And it's cheap and it's a lot of fun. Somehow since the last time I played a few months ago, something in my brain has clicked and I'm like, I'm good at the game now. I'm not great, but I'm good. And I have this understanding of what I'm doing now that before I was just sort of, you know, flailing around. But somehow in the couple of months I took off from playing it, I'm good again. I don't know, or I'm good now. I don't know what happened.
Yay.
So I'm making progress and unlocking new classes and smashing things with a big-ass sword. And farts are funny.
Ooh.
I don't know if you're aware of this, Bill, but they are.
I mean, I've seen the world. And from an early age, I had a suspicion.
Rogue Legacy, by the way, listeners, is a side-scrolling game where you go into a dungeon and you're trying to, you know, get fat loot and beat bosses. And when you die, one of your offspring takes over for you. And it gives you three options. And each one has a different class and different traits you can have. And in the sixth episode, I picked a character that had IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome. And every once in a while, when that character would jump or double jump or dash, there'd be a sound effect. And that was way too funny. Because I am incredibly mature and very highbrow.
So crassy.
And I laugh at farts. Because there's something great about running away from a thing that's trying to kill you and hearing... Oh, it makes me happy. But anyway, yeah. Also, I think that the next Where Are My Legs that I play will be a game called Super Hot. So look that up if you don't know what that is. It's a first-person game, of course, because it's going to be Where Are My Legs, where time only moves when you move.
Oh.
And it's very trippy and nifty and neat.
So it's kind of like you can take as much time as you need to decide what to do next, but... you don't actually get any mechanical advantage to it.
Yeah, well, actually, no, you can't, because time is still technically moving. Like, if you stand there long enough, that bullet will eventually hit you, but it's just sort of inching forward.
So you're just sort of like on flash time, but the world catches up to you when you actually move?
Yeah, so when you... I can't remember if it counts when you are looking around without actually moving, but if you... you know, pull out a weapon or swing a weapon or take a step in any direction, time will move while you're doing that. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people play it, and it looks really cool, so I can't wait.
Sounds like you're operating in standstill bullet time, but...
something like that,
the moment you move, the bullet time effect is over, and you're in Zack Snyder time.
Oh, there you go, yeah. You move back and forth between bullet time and Zack Snyder time, just at will.
That's terrifying.
Oh, God, now my head hurts. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
But anyway, yeah, that's what's going on the YouTube channel right now. I'm finally done with the Hearthstone adventure, so I can stop posting... four Hearthstone videos a week. Five Hearthstone videos a week. Whew. That got tiring.
Can't bet.
But anyway. Right. And if you want to help support what I do, what with the podcasts every week and all of this video content, then by all means, feel free to check out the Patreon at patreon.com/themanapool. You can get all Manapool episodes and all YouTube videos early if you like. And if you like, you can sign up for the odds and ends, where you get all of the stuff recorded both before and after Monday Night Magic and the Manapool, which is uncensored and unfiltered, and it's not right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so not only do you get to hear us plan out the show every week, but you get to hear us talk about whatever random nonsense comes to mind. And sometimes you get to hear Clues swear a lot, and that makes it all worth it.
It's the little things, really.
It really is. It's brilliant. So... and if you want to help support Magic podcasting in general, but not me specifically, I can't say I blame you there, you can go to mtgcast.com and click on Support MTGcast and sign up for a small monthly donation, because while MTGcast is completely free to all of you listeners out there, and it's completely free to all of us podcasters out here, out there as well, wherever, it is not actually completely free at all, and costs quite a bit of money, so every little bit there also helps. Yay.
Hurrah.
So we have gone on long enough for a week where nothing happened, so we're going to go now. Oh, and you can email me to Chewie, that's Chewie, at mtgcast.com. I knew I forgot something. Now we're done. So this has been Monday Night Magic number 529. Thank you all so very much for listening, and go play some Magic.